from Holland to Gimbal.com, strong and tough uncertain relations. Carlo actually worked at Perimeter Institute 10 years ago, and he has worked on very topical related to quantum information and entropy, and also entanglement and the geometry of quantum states.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for this invitation and an opportunity to visit the place I worked here exactly 10 years ago. Just to mention, not only this part of the PI didn't exist, it's a new part, but also as I came here, the old, black building was already here, but we were not allowed to enter. But I still had an office in the old post building over there, and then I witnessed the opening of this building exactly 10 years ago. In fact, it will be 10 years in September 2014, so soon. So now I'm here and will tell you something about uncertainty relations, which are, in my opinion, important not only for quantum information, but also for foundations. Of course, you know about Heisenberg a lot. I will recall you something what's necessary, but first let me start mentioning my Polish collaborators, Zbigniew Puchała from Gliwice, also now from Krakow, and Łukasz Rudnicki, originally from Warsaw, now in Freiburg, in Germany. But first, I will tell you something about mutually unbiased basis. In fact, this is my main motivation this time to visit Canada. Yesterday, I attended a workshop, mathematical workshop in Banff, in Alberta, and I just presented a talk about Hadamard and complex Hadamard matrices and relation to mutually unbiased basis. And the good news is that I'm really much impressed how much mathematicians care about it. They know our problems and they are interested in not only in combinatorics, but to apply their knowledge and possibly to find new complex Hadamard matrices or mutually unbiased basis. And they are very well known. They are aware of the problem. So problem is the following. The definition of MUBES, you know, if you have two set of bases, they are called mutually unbiased if the scalar product between any two states of any two bases is equal to 1 over n. It's easy to see there are not more than n plus 1 mutually unbiased bases in dimension n. If the dimension is a power of prime, n is p to k, such solutions are known. But for the simplest case, like 6, which is 2 times 3, it's a product of primes. So it's not a prime, neither a power of prime. And here we know that there are no more than 7 MUBES, but only 3 are known up till now. And nobody knows how many MUBES exist in this case. And then this is related to this problem of complex Hadamard, because a transition matrix from one basis to another is just a complex Hadamard. What means that all, it's an orthogonal or unitary matrix, and all elements have the same modulus. And it's strange to realize that this mu problem is open for n equals 6. And also another problem, to classify all complex Hadamard matrices of this kind is also solved for n from 2 to 5, and for 6 is still open. Well, so just a short example, that it is an interesting task. For n equal 2, you know this matrix very well, standard Hadamard. For n equal 3, there is a Fourier matrix. By the way, Fourier matrix exists for any dimensionality. For n equals 6, there also exists a Fourier matrix. But here's another more interesting example, so-called circulant matrix of Bjerk. Circulant means there's a vector here. D is a given complex number of modulus 1. So you construct such a vector. As you see, there's only I and D here, possibly 1 over D. And then you have a circulant matrix, so you just move this element here, write the second row, and do it again and again, and then this matrix happens to be unitary. So it's not easy to see it, but it is so. So it is just to show you that there are very many special matrices like this, and it's not easy to classify all of them. And then why should we care at all about maps and complex Hadamard matrices? In short, because they are distinguished. They offer you, in a sense, optimal scheme of a quantum measurement. They are related to many, many different problems in quantum mechanics, quantum information, in mathematics. And we started to work on those more than 10 years ago. In 2006, we published a paper like a review what was known those days. It's called Catalog of Complex Hadamard Matrices. Now, if you are interested, you can go to our webpage and find all complex Hadamard matrices we know for n equal 2 to something like 16. If you are possibly discover some new complex Hadamard matrix, please let me know. I will be happy to make a reference to your paper and to put the new matrix into our catalog. Then we also wrote a review with Berger Englert. So this was your supervisor, yes, from Singapore, some time ago. And then it happens, of course, that after 5 years, there are some new results and new matrices, even though the main mu problem is still not solved. For n equals 6, we still do not know how many mups do exist. So, as I mentioned, mups are in some sense distinguished. How distinguished? Well, this is just a short break, a picture from Krakow. This is the Vistula River and the Wawel Castle. By the way, Krakow was the only city, only major city not destroyed during the World War II, and therefore we are happy that several nice old buildings are still there. And to answer the question how mups are distinguished, I will just return to the main subject of this talk, to the uncertainty relations. So perhaps you know the name of Heisenberg, so this is the Heisenberg uncertainty relation, but you might not know in what paper it first appeared. I was very much impressed to learn that not in the paper of Heisenberg. You see, Rob, were you aware of this? Who first wrote the Heisenberg uncertainty relation? Not Heisenberg, Kennard, and nobody knows his name. Maybe you do.
I've heard of him, but I didn't know.
So the point was, the original paper of Heisenberg, it was not written like this. It was written in, with the sign approximately. It was written that I think like delta P, delta Q is approximately something like one. And I think this very relation first appeared in the very same year, by the way, 27, in the paper by Kennard, and somehow it happens that he is not so well known in our community. Maybe he should. Then maybe you know a more general formulation of Robertson. But here, this means that for any state, if you compute for any quantum state phi, you compute variance in one variable like x, and multiply it by variance with the conjugate variables, you get the bound. It cannot be too small. Here, it's a bit different formulation. You define for any operators A and B the expectation, again, variances. So the difference between expectation value of A square minus square of the expectation value. And then the Robertson principle says, okay, it's fucking inequality, that for any state psi, the product of two variances is greater or equal to the expectation value of a commutator. Of course, it is a psi-dependent result. But it's also interesting because if A and B do not commute, for instance, if you take P and X, of course, they do not commute. So this relation is, in a sense, more general because if you plug here A, P and X, you get back this. But here, if you take A and B, which slightly do not commute, you see, if they do commute, then this is zero, and the right-hand side goes to zero. So in a sense, it's important here because steering, choosing different A and B, you can change the degree how much they do commute or not commute, you change the right-hand side of this relation.
Carol,
yes?
Historically speaking, people sometimes call that the Schrödinger-Robertson formulation. Do you know why Schrödinger's name gets associated with that?
Well, in fact, not. You do? No. Well, like maybe this should be called Heisenberg-Kennard, but it's not. Poor Kennard, okay, he wrote good paper, but not hardly anybody remembers about him. And now another option is, instead of classifying the width of a wave packet by a variance, we can, for instance, use many different quantities. One option is to take entropy, sometimes it's called Boltzmann-Gibbs continuous entropy. So you have the wave function psi, and you compute, take it absolute value squared, it's like probability. So this is like minus p log p. Of course, you have to integrate it over entire space. So you can do it in the x position representation, then in p momentum representation. You can add those two numbers together, and you can see that it cannot be too small. Look, in the Heisenberg formulation, we had a product of two quantities. Now we have here a sum. This mainly because we have here log. Therefore, you work with a sum of two entropies. Here, this number, of course, is larger than one. In a sense, this is somehow a consequence of choice of units. But definitely, this is a number larger than zero. And here, I'm proud to say that there is an important paper by Polish physicists Białynicki, Biula, and Mycielski from 75. And direct, the same, similar, almost similar result was also obtained in the very same year by Beckner. Moreover, Professor Białynicki Biula, he's still active. In 2006, he returned to the problem, look after how many years. And he generalized his relations for so-called Reni or alpha entropies. So you see, this is the moment of the probability to power 2 alpha, to power alpha, and then 1 minus 1 over alpha log of this. So this prefactor is on purpose here because it's easy to see if you go with alpha to 1, it will be like symbol log of 1, which is 0 over 0. But if you use the L'Hopital rule, you can show that this converges back to the standard entropy. By the way, can you guess why I put here such a number, 2053? What will happen this year? Have you any plans for this year? Not yet? No, no, to be honest. Look, we are discussing this paper, which is a good one, written in 75. So I can wish any paper you are going to write this year will be discussed in 2053 in 39 years. So this is a challenge for us to write such a paper that somebody will care in 2053, which might not be so simple.
It's not a prime number.
Yes, but this is a different story. So now, the original formulation of Białynicki, Biula, and Mycielski was, in fact, designed for an infinite dimensional Hilbert space. We had an integral P log P. Here, let's discuss a related but different problem. If I have a finite n-dimensional Hilbert space. So let's take an element of the space, expand it in any basis. So I is any basis, and AI are the expansion coefficients. Of course, I can square them. And then I get the probabilities, because sum of those numbers pi is 1. And I can describe this decomposition by standard Shannon entropy, as you see, standard formula, minus sum p log p. So this is one number, this entropy of this decomposition, which describes how, in a sense, what is the width of the decomposition of this function in this basis. Alternatively, I can say, if you have a measurement, standard Lüders von Neumann projective measurement in this very basis, this is the entropy of the outcome of results. But I can do it not only in one basis, I can go to another basis. And I can do the same, expand the same state in another basis, or I can perform a measurement operation in a different basis. Let's take one basis like x, y, then another basis like x prime, y prime. They are not exactly mutually unbiased. Mutually unbiased, it would be if this angle would be exactly 45 degrees. So I perform first a measurement in one basis. This is described by entropy SA. Then I perform another measurement in rotated basis. And I get another entropy. I call it here SQ. Those numbers here, QJ, they are just probabilities related to the second measurement, so nothing else as the absolute squared elements of the second expansion. And now you can ask whether there is a kind of relation for the sum of two entropies, like in the case of Białynicki-Mycielski, which should be state independent. So you want to see whether the sum of those two quantities should be larger than something for any state psi. It should be a state-independent bound. And there it is. The first result I will quote is from Deutsch. So look, 83 is also, how many? 31 years old, yes? Quite a few. And interestingly, this bound is a function of only a single number, C1, which is nothing else as the maximal element absolute value squared of the unitary matrix which just rotates. This is the rotation matrix. In this case, it's just this orthogonal matrix which rotates yellow coordinates into pink. So x, y into x prime, y prime. So you take this matrix, U is defined here. You square all entries, take absolute values, and look for the maximal element. By the way, please observe one simple thing. If this is identity matrix, you have no rotation, then the maximal element is what? One. Identity consists of several ones. And then C is one, and then you can check that how it is. Square root of C is also 1. 1 plus 1 over 2 is 1. So log of 1 is 0. So this will be 0, and as it should be. Because, of course, if you have two measurements in the same basis, then the right-hand side has to be equal to 0. This relation of Deutsch was later improved by Massen and Uffing. And the formula is even simpler. It also contains the same number C1. We call it Massen-Uffing, not Manchester United, but Massen-Uffing relations. So look, it's minus log of C1. C1 is again the same number here. So the size of the largest entry of the unitary rotation matrix. It is a very interesting result and a strong one, a good one. For instance, let's check what happens if we take, for instance, any unbiased measurement. If you take Fourier matrix, you know how it looks like. It's a discrete endpoints Fourier transform. It's a very special matrix in a sense that all entries have the same modulus, like 1 over n, modulus squared. So it belongs, in fact, to just this class of complex Hadamard matrices. So then all elements are the same. The smallest is equal to the largest is 1 over n. So C1 is 1 over n. Then if you compute minus log of it, we get log of n. So then the Massen-Uffing has a very nice structure. Sum of two entropies is log of n, where n is the dimension of the Hilbert space. And then you see this boundary strong. It can be saturated. This is easy to see, because if you take a state which is just an element of the first basis, so the expansion is 1, 0, 0, 0, then if you make a Fourier transform, all Fourier transform of this vector will be a vector with the same components. So the second entropy computed in the rotated basis will be log of n. So then it's, you see, you get already the bound. So in some cases, Massen-Uffing are optimal, in some case not. And now one of our, I will just finish the sentence. Aims was to check whether we are able to improve those bounds of Massen-Uffing, yes?
Are you saying that the entropy is basis dependent?
Look, the Shannon, the von Neumann entropy, of course, is not. But here it's the entropy of a measurement. Let's go back. This entropy I'm discussing here, of course, it is. Look, this entropy, let's have a look. This entropy is basis dependent because this entropy corresponds in a given basis. Look, it's not a von Neumann entropy. Von Neumann entropy of a pure state is always zero. We are discussing now only pure states. But we are not discussing von Neumann entropy, which is entropy of the spectrum. Here I have a pure state. Spectrum is 1, 0, 0, 0. Von Neumann entropy is 0. I am discussing a different entropy. Of course, the entropy is the same, but the entropy of a different vector. Of what vector? Of the probabilities obtained by a measurement, orthogonal projective measurement in first or in second basis. And here, this measurement entropy, of course, is dependent on the base. Okay? Are you with me?
Yes.
Okay, so it depends here, the entropy on the bases, therefore I denote like SP and SQ, or here SA and SB, where A and B are the operators which define those bases. Those bases can be thought as the eigenbases of those observables. Sometimes you can think like this. And then they do depend on the choice of the bases, but interestingly, sum of two entropies is bounded from below, cannot be too low. For any state, it is larger than something. Okay? So this is the result of Massen-Uffing. So now my aim is to look whether this bound can be improved. By the way, the bound of Mass and Ufink appeared also many years ago, like 25 or so, a lot. And then, of course, people asked this question. And there were some, in a sense, minor improvements. For instance, they treated the case n equal 2, then get some improvements for n equal 3, but there were no major improvements. And recently, it happened that just for the last couple of years, people got interested, returned to this problem, and there is much progress in this field. So now the main task of this talk to show you something what we have done in this field and possibly make a review and say why this could be important for what reasons. Before I tell you what we have done, I will tell you first about our tools, which are in a sense simple. The first fact is we use the majorization concept. Are you aware of with this? Look, this is the first simple algebraic concept. If you have two vectors, let's take them two probability vectors of the same number of components. So yj and let's say xi are two probability vectors, they sum to unity. And we say that vector x is majorized by y, written like this, so it's like calligraphic less sign, if those two relations are satisfied. What it means? It means that the cumulative distribution, so the sum of I equal 1 to m, is smaller than this cumulative distribution. So if you plot two cumulative distributions, one is below another. Therefore, it's called majorization. And the key fact, the mathematical fact I'm going to use, is so-called Schur, the properties of the Schur concave functions. So the theorem says that if vector x is majorized by y, then for any Schur concave function, they are in relation. That, for instance, the entropy, this is this Rényi entropy of order alpha I defined before. And it happens that this entropy belongs to this class of Schur concave functions. And then the mathematical theorem says that if this is satisfied, two vectors are majorized, you immediately get a nice result that the entropy of this vector x is larger or equal to the entropy of y. So this is a very strong and important tool and easy to work with. Because you have to just check that this is satisfied for any m, then one vector is majorized by another, and the implication is that all reasonable functions which have this Schur concave property, it is like generalization of concavity for the vectors of many variables, they satisfy this relation. Okay, so are you with me more or less? Are you familiar with this? This is relatively simple, so if you are not familiar with this, so please try to, it may be used in your, let's say, toolbox of algebraic tools. It's good to know this. And you see, mathematically, it's like classical mathematics. Sure, it's like 100 years ago. And the second fact which we use is also simple. Look, you know this symbol, like tensor product. We usually use it for quantum states. But in principle, you can take a classical state, so probability vectors, and define, well, one usually does it, but not so often. P times Q is what? It's a vector of length n square, which contains P1, Q1, then P1, Q2, and so on. So products, element-wise, you get the probability vector of length n square, where you have all possible products of different components of P and Q. This is very simple. But now look, we are going to look for the bound for a sum of two entropies. Okay, there could be standard entropy with alpha equal 1 or generalized entropies whatsoever. We are going to study bound of two entropies. So look, this is nothing else as the entropy of a single vector which has this product form. Because for product forms, the entropies are additive. So this is just a minor observation which will be useful in our work. Now you basically see what I'm going to show you. If we are going to find a vector Q, Q is a capital Q stands for a vector yet unknown of length n square, which majorizes this product, then what? Then we are done. Because using this Schur theorem, if we find a single vector Q, which majorizes this, then we know that the entropy of this vector will give us a bound for the sum of two entropies we want to bound. So this is the main ingredient of our work. We are looking for such a vector, classical probability vector, which majorizes this product vectors. What is the issue? Okay, first of all, P and Q, they are the vectors of probabilities obtained in the projective measurement. But what is here not so simple or difficult? That we want to have a bound which works for any psi, yet unknown psi. Not for a given psi, but for it has to work for unknown all states of the n-dimensional Hilbert space. If you have any other questions or something is not clear, please let me know or just ask. And now, look, here is a log of parameter, not only because I worked here, but because of another issue. Who will recognize why I put here the logo? It's maybe here I use some auxiliary variables which are related to parameter. So I take a unitary matrix U. This is just this matrix, rotation matrix, which joins two measurement bases. It is of size n. Then I denote a sub-matrix of size mn. So mn are indices. They go from, let's say, 1 to n minus 1, any size of the matrix. So they can be a square sub-matrices, so a part of unitary matrix. You will see them in a moment. And then this is a norm of such a sub-matrix. Norms of the largest singular value. It is not a Hermitian matrix, so I will not talk about eigenvalues, but singular values. So Sk is now maximal of norms of such objects. So here I have, what is this? This is a vector of size 1 times k. This is a matrix of width 2 and height k minus 1, and so on. So now how you see how it is related to Perimeter Institute? You don't see it yet? Okay, let's have a look. So I will plot it for you here. So if I have A1K, it is any matrix, submatrix of length 1 and height K. It is embedded in this huge matrix U, which belongs to N, to UN. Now I take A2K minus 1. So it is what? It will be here, matrix of size 2. And here it's a bit shorter. It has k minus 1 rows. Next one will be A3k minus 2. Yes, is it correct? 3k minus 2. So it will have 3 rows. And here 1, 2, 3. And here k minus 1, k minus, sorry, 2 columns. Okay, so what is the name of your institute related to? Okay, many different things, but here I have such a blocks. What are the submatrices? There are some truncations of unitaries of different sizes. Yeah, so perimeter is equal always to 1 plus k. Here is 1 plus k, here is 2 plus k minus 1 is also. So basically, number of columns plus number of rows is k plus 1. So what I do, I take a maximum or supremum over all such a sub-blocks of the same perimeter. So you see, it is just a good to produce this research here and to put the logo of our institute here. So basically, I take all different submatrices of my unitary U, I fix K, and I look for the largest entropy of matrices of some blocks of the same perimeter. By the way, the shortest K can be equal to 2. So if I fix K to 2, then this is simple. Then it's what? 1 plus 1, this is the block of size 1. So it is related to mass and Ewing. Because what do mass and Ewing? They look for the largest element. So it's in a sense, this will be like generalization of mass and Ewing. Because my definition is I sum. If I have a block of size 1, I have to sum length and width is 1 plus 1 is 2.
Right, that's k plus 1. You just define the perimeter as k plus 1.
Yeah, yeah. So parameter is k plus one. Yes, yes. Parameter is k plus one. So okay, yeah. Sure. So I take k equal one. Yes, exactly. So k equal one, then parameter is two, and then it corresponds to the blocks of size one. So just elements, largest elements of the unitary matrix. So as you see, it will be related to looking for largest elements of the unitary matrix or largest blocks, vectors or squares or whatsoever. Yes? Okay, maximal, of course, it is a matrix which has the largest norm. I'm sorry, I missed it. So a matrix is maximal if it has a largest norm out of all matrices of the size. For instance, maximal submatrix of size one is the largest element concerning the absolute values. Okay? So basically I will look as they did. They were looking for the largest element. So here I basically do the same, but not only restrict my attention to the first element, but also to possible two or three or more elements, in a sense. Okay, and now a key theorem. I claim that the vector P tensor Q I wish to majorize is indeed majorized by the following vector R1, R2 minus R1, and so on, where RK is just a function of this coefficient. So if I know those numbers, I look for the largest one, I define SK, from this I define RK, and it is always, it's easy to show it's larger or equal than LK minus one. So I have such a differences which are non-negative, and this another vector, and then I will prove that this vector is indeed majorizes this one. And now look, from this statement, I get this vector Q. I can immediately plug it here and show that sum of two entropies I wish to estimate is larger or equal than the entropy of this vector. This is the, could be taken for alpha equal one, so the Shannon entropy, but here I take alpha is arbitrary Rényi entropy, and this is the formula for the Rényi entropy of order alpha of this vector Q. I just compute a moment of this vector and take log of this and 1 over 1 minus alpha. So what's nice? I have explicit formula for the bound, provided I'm able somehow, okay, I have to prove it, but then I have to compute those numbers. But you see, numerically it's not difficult. If you have a matrix of size, okay, to be honest, if n is huge, like 10 or 20, it's difficult. But for 3, 4, 5, it's very, very simple. Okay, with 2, you can do it with your hand, and 5, perhaps, with computer.
Do you know whether there are vectors that are still above P tensor Q in the majorization order, and but below this vector, or is this the smallest vector in the order that can majorize P tensor Q?
No. Of course, it's a good question. This is a question, but I don't know the answer. So this is, in fact, I will show you, I can try to improve it. So basically, in another way, you can ask whether you can improve possibly this bound in a different way. So of course, I don't claim it's optimal. In some cases, it will be optimal, in some cases not. So in general, the answer is no, it's not the optimal.
So you have cases where you prove it's not optimal.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, it's a difficult question. So the general question, you can not hope to find an optimal bound which is easy to somehow produce, which will be optimal. I wish. Yeah, I will return to this. I hope I will find some time. Yes. So now I don't have time to go details into the proof, but I want just to mention the proof is simple. You can basically only understand two steps. One step is simple. What we to define this vector R, what we have to do, we have somehow to bound. We have this vector of tensor product of classical probability vectors. And we want somehow, we assume that we order them decreasingly, and we want to estimate, let's say, first and second and third and or fourth element. And this is how it can be done. The key fact I'm going to use is very simple. In green, if you can read it, what's that? This is the standard inequality concerning geometric mean, which is always smaller or equal to the arithmetic mean. This you know, or you can learn about it. This is not difficult. And now look, if we see that now for x we plug this part, for y this part, this corresponds exactly to this, and having proven this relation, we can just bound size of given element of this vector. And to complete the proof, we need another simple algebraic lemma. If I take m orthogonal vectors from one base and n from another base, m and n are smaller or equal to capital N. Capital N is the size of Hilbert space I wish to work. And m and n are smaller. Basically, they will correspond to the size of those blocks taken from the matrix. Then I want to estimate sum of projections, square projections, of a given vector psi for one basis and another basis. And the statement is it's this maximum is equal to 1 plus singular value of A, where A is just a matrix of transition matrix from one basis to another. So now look, let's go to this picture. So A is exactly our sub matrix of the huge unitary matrix. If we had taken capital M and capital N equal to, M and N equal to capital N, it will be huge unitary matrix. And this is only a block, a part of it. Can you see it? It's only a part of unitary matrix because I take only here M or N elements. And then one can find such psi that both terms are equal, and then this bound can be saturated. And now this result you see here, what appears a singular value of A, it's nothing else. I'm going to use the operator norm. So for me, for any matrix A, this means just maximal singular, let's call it, sigma max. Let's put it like this. Sigma max of A. So maximal singular value of this matrix. And this shows you why those norms of matrices appear. So to give you some, yes? Sure.
So the term on the right-hand side is supposed to equation one at the top.
Yes.
Right. So when I take that term and square it, that's where I get all these products of P's and Q's.
Yes.
But I'm going to get products of, P's that extend from 1 to k minus m and Q's that extend from 1 to m.
Yes, yes, yes.
But who's to say that the leading, the decreasing order.
Yes, this is a good question. Yeah, of course. This is the point that we don't know whether we know that P1, Q1 is the best, but we do not know whether P1, Q2 or Q1, P2 is largest. Okay, this is true, but this is the point. So we want to have now that we want to estimate maximal value of the second element if you order them. And here, this gives me exactly the maximum. So this gives me a possibility to bound the second largest term. This is, of course, what's important. For majorization, you compare vectors which are ordered. So you have to order them. Of course, it's easy if you know the elements, you can order them. But if you don't know them yet, this is somehow, this is just a good question, this is, makes a problem. But then somehow.
I guess I'm not following the argument. So that PI has been defined so that P1 is greater than P2, et cetera.
Yeah.
QJs have been defined so that Q1 is greater than Q2.
And then we order this new vector tensor product, and we want to find what is the possible, what any bound for the possible size of the second or third element of this.
Right, and you've just written an example here. The second term could be P and Q and that might be.
Yeah. But could be also, this could be somehow interchanged, okay?
It has to be either P1, Q1,
yes,
or
P2, yes, Q1. Yes, yes, yes. And here, in this way, we somehow get the. Possibility to, by the way, here we have a sum of, we already have a sum of those. So this is the bound, not for the second one, but for the, for instance, first one or sum of, for instance, two or four elements. Therefore, what we have done in a second ago, we have somehow to do, our vector contains differences of those R. So we have to compare somehow elements obtained from the equation, from equation one. So let's look how it works. So for instance, I take matrix of size four. So I work in the Hilbert space of size four. I do two measurements, one in standard basis, one in the rotated basis. So I approximated, it's like orthogonal matrix, which I truncated just to have only two digits. So now look, First question, Massen Ufink posed, what is the largest element concerning the absolute value? This is in red, 64. Okay, this is a bit smaller. But this is the largest. So this will contribute to the S1, to the largest entry of the matrix absolute value. Now, to obtain S2, I have to take a largest sub-matrix of size 1 times 2. So a vector which is horizontal or vertical. This green is horizontal, blue is vertical. I found those two. I compare them. Then now it happens that this is larger. So this will give me the entry S2, and I will get the quantity R2. So this is as simple as that. You have to compare not only the largest element, but then you have to compare all vectors, for instance, of size, subvectors of size 2, which are vertical, horizontal, and choose the largest one. This will be auxiliary information I will use. Now, if I go with k to 3, I have to choose 3 objects of the same perimeter. So all I take vectors 1 times 3, they are in green, this is the longest. Or I take in blue vector 3 times 1, this is the longest, which is vertical. Or 2 times 2 is a matrix of size 2 times 2, so a block, which has the largest singular value. And I compare, I found those maximal. So you see maximal is those sublog which has the largest norm. I compute norms of this red matrix, blue vector, green vector, and find the largest value, and this I call S3. I define R3 in this sense, and I write down such a vector, and I have my majorization relation. This is the next step. So for any k, I can improve the quality of my result by adding additional terms which appear if I use higher order k's. So in the first case, I use something like Masson-Ufink. It will not be exactly the same, but similar. Then I use, for k equal to vectors of length 2, for k equal 3, I use vector of size 3 or blocks 2 times 2. Okay, and now a quick example how it works. So I take for n equal 4 such a permutation matrix. Now, just for fun, I can erase it to any parameter beta, where beta is from 0 to 1. So I take beta as an independent parameter, goes from 0 to 1. For 0, I have permutation matrix. And of course, entropy, sum of entropies will be 0. But for it's easy to see when beta is 1 half, then this will be like a Fourier matrix. And here I have, this is the bound of Deutsch. So at the vertical axis, you have some bounds, so sum of entropies. Now, my bound with k equal 1 is in green. K is somehow the size of the submatrix I'm going to discuss. Here is k equal 2 is in blue, and k equal 3 is in orange. And this is the best I can get, because k has to be smaller than n, than 4. And in red, you have Masson-Ufink. So you see, at this exemplary case, we are often better than Masson-Ufink, but in the very center, which corresponds to the Fourier matrix, Masson-Ufink is a little bit better than we are. So what was here the point? To show that our method works and gives better bounds, so higher. Better bounds, it means the higher values for a large set of matrices. We can show that we are always better than Deutsch and very often better than Masson-Ufink. Yes, so in this case it's n minus 1. So you have here this orange, yes? So it's still not. Unfortunately, it's not true that we are always better than Masson-Ufink in this approach. I will show you another approach where this is not the case. Okay, so here's again a picture from Krakow. And as you see, in fact, I was working in the atomic optics department. So here you have some optical effects in Krakow. And this is the medieval church of St. Mary from 13th century. So, now here, do you know names of Coles and Piani? Who does? You do, yes? So, just after we published our paper, I presented to you a year ago, they had another bound which is stronger than Masson-Ufink. To tell the truth, I visited Singapore a year ago, and I presented similar talk, and then Patrick stand up and said, oh, we have a better bound. Okay. Let's see how their bound goes. Now they have C1 and C2 denote the first and the second largest value. among all the elements of the unitary matrix, where capital C is 1 plus C1 squared over 2. So this is the explicit bound of Patrick and Markov, while Mass and Ufik is minus log of C1. And it's easy to show that this is better than Mass and Ufik. Well, so to tell the truth, we immediately checked whether their bound is better than ours and when it is so. It happens that it's better than Mass and Ufink, but it's very often worse than ours. However, it was for us an additional impact to think how to improve our results. And here's a kind of hybrid-like analog of the bound inspired by Kolespiani. Basically, we have the following statement. We have the, now this is the sum of entropies, I'm sorry, now it's H, is larger than minus Q times C, where Q is our vector. Q is, you recall, this 1 minus R and so on, I discussed a second ago. And C is the vector of Kolespiani, so it should be like first element, largest element of the unitary matrix, second largest should be down here, and so on. So this is explicit statement. It uses basically the same information we had. It uses all the those norms of submatrices or just the vector of ordered elements of this matrix. And then in particular, setting our Q. Q is the vector which could be in principle of length n minus 1. But even if we cut it, take only two elements, we get such a result, which is already a little bit better than Kolesz and Piani. And here, okay, there's yet another more advanced version. I will not discuss it right now. But here, what I want to say that, by the way, this is a remark for you especially, because you, in a sense, ask about von Neumann entropy. So all what I said up till now concerned pure states. But now you can ask, well, what happens if you change the setup and discuss the same measurement process for the mixed states? And the answer is simple. Our bound for mixed states, we can show it is greater than equal that the same bound for pure states plus the entropy of the state. So here the entropy for Neumann entropy enters the game. Of course, if you have pure state, this is zero, and this is the original bound. By the way, recently there was a paper by in the group of Terry Rudolph, who is also an often guest in your co-author, I believe, and there's a Polish guy, Kozekwa, who worked with him. Yes? You know this paper? They published it this year. However, Patrick Coles drew my attention to the fact that this similar like result, not for this particular bound, was already in his paper a year or 2 years earlier. So,
can I ask a question with this?
Sure.
If you've shown that P tends to Q is majorized by some vector for all psi.
Yes, yes.
Haven't you also shown for everything in the convex hull of all psi, maybe that bound is satisfied? Or no, I guess it's not linear in P and Q, so it doesn't.
It needs not to be so. However, no. Look, if you have a mixed state, then it will be always, the entropy will be always larger or equal than the corresponding bound for the pure state plus a correction. So in a sense, you are right that because of this, for mixed state, you will have always larger. You can improve the bounds. Yeah. So it is so. Not only is larger or equal, but plus a correction you can get from the von Neumann entropy. Yes. Okay, and here is a new version which was again inspired a bit with the discussion with Patrick. So we call it now strong majorization result. Basically, now we can show that the following result holds. So look, the statement is the following. I have a different vector which happens to also give us majorizing vector. And why it is better? Because now here I have directly S. So I use the same objects I had, but I don't need to do those R, which included S to power square. This vector contains elements linear in S. And then, so this was proven in the recent paper, and then we get the same result that the, or similar, sum of entropies is larger or equal than the entropies of W, where W's are given here. And you can also formulate it for arbitrary alpha Reni entropy. So this was published just this year. And here, there's a family of n equal three matrices which depends only on a single parameter theta, like rotation matrix. You don't see much here, but in principle, it's like this for this very family. Here we compare Mass and Ufink, then is Kolespiani. They have some two variants, three of ours, and this is the best, which somehow we believe it is the best. By the way, it's not like this. We can prove it's the best in all cases. Sometimes one approach is better, sometimes other, but this is the best in most cases, which is a bit weak statement. No, no. This means that it's a bit strange that I take this vector W and put here one in front. So this is a bit tricky because this altogether is not a probability vector anymore, because this vector W, you have one in front. But then if you compute entropy of this vector, one will not contribute to the entropy at all. Yes, because if you have one and take P log P, if you plug for the first component one, you get zero. So eventually this vector is this vector and one in front. It means one in front and all this written, yes? This is the plus. Okay, plus means I put one in front, comma, and this vector. Okay?
Is the direct sum on the right-hand side of that equation the same as the meaning on the left-hand side? Like, let's say P is n.
Ah, sorry. No, of course, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. This is my mistake. So thanks for, you are the first good person in the audience. I already showed this talk three times and you are the first who noticed the mistake. Here should be cross and here should be plus. So sorry. This should be like this. I'm very sorry. So thank you for pointing this. Maybe, I'm not sure whether this you spotted this immediately, but of course this is wrong. Let's see how it was before. It was a copy-paste somehow. No. Here it is. So it should be like this, of course. It should be tensor product. So, yeah, but...
You can also try to bound the direct sum using the same sort of approach. So I thought that's what you're talking about, but it's still the tensor product.
Yeah, it is. Of course, what is wrong here, we want to bound tensor product. Here it must be tensor product, but here it can be sum. So anyway, this is a mistake here. It should be tensor product.
Okay.
And this is only a trick to use for proving that this vector does the job.
And this is no longer a probability vector.
No, but it does the job. Yes, but no longer, but it does the job. And you get the somehow good result. Okay, so here, this is a matrix found by Marco and Patrick of size 3. And they were pleased to see that their result is better than Mass and Ufink. And we compared, so for instance, this is results of Deutsch, Mass and Ufink for this very matrix. Two variants of Kolespiani. And there are three variants of ours, and this is the best second majorization result. Of course, you can say, oh, it works only for their case. And this is true. We cannot prove that it is better in all cases. It's not so, but it's, fortunately, it happens to be the best at the market in very, very many cases. So now look, I have perhaps two more minutes. I'm sorry I used my time. But now the simple question, what happens if you have not two measurements as before, but many measurements, like L measurements? So let's assume you have L unitary matrices and you have L measurements. And then our majorization technique works. We can get a similar result. And then we have a, let's say, poly measurement entropy uncertainty relation that the sum of L terms is greater than something, and those something are just, again, numbers which are obtained by taking subnorms like here, but not from a single matrix, but from the concatenation of those unitary matrices. So not going into details, it can be done. Now look what happens. Here, I took the following family of three measurements in n equal 2, so three 1-qubit measurements. This is the last term I'm going to tell you. So first is standard basis, then it's rotated basis by angle theta, and here's another rotation with I. So with theta is equal to 0, of course, this is identity. So you have three measurements in the same basis. But now look, what happens if I plug for theta pi over 4? Can you see what you get? Who will be first to realize what you get? No? What I start my talk with? It's written here. They are mups. You get mups. You get three sets of three mups in n equal 2. Well, not quite with I here. So, okay, they are of course really related to Pauli matrices. They're like combination of Pauli matrices.
I just meant that the basis is x1, z eigenbasis. So that would be an example.
Okay, but this is somehow a simple example of mup. So, changing theta, I interpolate between measuring in the same basis and in mups. So, here theta goes from 0 to pi half. For theta equal pi 4, I have mups. And here are different results like mass and oofing pairwise. Pairwise, it means for each pair of measurements. And then our majorization. So red is our second majorization. And the blue is the numerical results which are optimal. So it means that we are still below optimum. But I think this method gives us first case where you can use it explicitly for any measurements of L measurements. And it's better, for instance, that this first majorization corresponds to the paper by Goel, Friedland, and Giorgio. So this corresponds to the black result. And now the second majorization is better. So you see now, last statement, I told you at the beginning that mups, mutually unbiased bases, are distinguished. How they are distinguished? Because they optimize something. What they optimize? For instance, for mups, they optimize the sum of entropies gained for any state in free measurements. In this case, free measurements in general in L measurements. So, last picture from Krakow and perhaps concluding remarks. So, there are different bounds which are used to bound sum of entropies of measurements. At the beginning, they were usually two, but then you can ask a question concerning the L measurements. And standard results, they are bounds very good of mass and oofing, which are optimal in some cases, but generically they are not optimized, not optimal. Many people tried to find better bounds, and we found a first majorization bound based on tensor product majorization, which in a sense corresponds to the results of Goel and others. But then we found another bound based on simple sum of two vectors which dominates the previous result. And then we get the hybrid bounds, which in a sense improve the bounds of Coles-Piani. And they can be generalized for the mixed states, that for the mixed states with entropy, for Neumann entropy, S of rho, the right-hand side is increased. And then we manage to generalize those results for the generic case of L orthogonal measurements. And there are many, many different applications, for instance, for concerning studies on entanglement, on criteria of entanglement, of estimation of mutual information, measurements in terms of quantum memory, and implications for foundations of quantum theory. So this is the last picture of Krakow with Tatra Mountains. You don't see them so often. And here is the promised set of important references. So there's Deutsch and Massen, this paper of Friedland, Gorgiou, and Goel I was referring to, which corresponds more or less to our first paper published in 2013. Then there's paper of Coles-Piani this year, and our last paper, which improves the paper of our previous paper, and also the work of Marco and Patrick. And there is this paper of Rudolf and his group. Thank you very much. Sorry for speaking 3 minutes longer. No, but I started. Thank you. Thank you.
Any quick questions? We already have a lot of questions.
I have one comment. So there was like a $1,000 prize by Jonas Kidura on improving, as far as I remember, it's on strict improving of this massive booking bound. I'm not sure, but it's like on Jonas.
But Mass and Uffing bound, he knew that, of course, they are, first of all, they
can. The
no, but look, the point is, here we discuss the case of finite dimensional Hilbert space. Why he discussed it for the another setup, the same he discussed 39 years before, so for the infinite dimensional, where he used the a variant of entropy, because not discrete entropy, but continuous. So basically, the problems are different. They are related, but not the same. And the Massenufing, and here we somehow concentrate on the case of finite ends of Massenufing. Bjarinski, Birula, Michelski are on the other side. And moreover, what's interesting to see, usually you think that if you go with n to infinity, those two ideas and setups should converge, but here it's not the case. You don't see any nice way how to translate those results in the limit n to infinity for the results, as it's a difference between continuous integration and sum. You have some subtle problems, so it's not so simple. Basically, there are two different problems.
It's still a matrixization relation for probability distributions, so you use a similar approach.
Well, we use all the time matrixization. However, there, I don't think that they do not. I mean, in the papers of I refer to Bjarinski, Birula, and people who work in the infinite dimensional Hilbert space, they use properties of Fourier transform of the continuous variable. They use some deep results concerning functional analysis of properties of a given function and its Fourier-like transform. Okay, so thank you. I will switch it off. Boom.
There was a quick question.
Can you say something about the state that saturates the bar? I mean, is there anything special about
it? Yeah, it's a very good question. Yes, it is. Unfortunately, not in general, but in the case of, it depends on the given unit element. For instance, for the Fourier case, it is simple. It is just a state which is one, all zeros in one basis, and uniform in another basis. Moreover, for n equal to 2, it's already complicated enough, but there was an Italian paper, I forgot now the names, where they studied this problem for n equal to 2. For n equal to 2, everything is a function only of a single angle here, it's just an orthogonal rotation matrix. So everything is a function of theta, and here what's interesting that is there's one special vector which is optimal for some values of theta, but then it's kind of phase transition for certain values of theta, there's kind of splitting there is somehow two. So it's already for n equal to 2, it's not simple. And for larger, I would have learned.
How about for full set of not?
Well, I don't recall now whether this is known. For maps, maybe it is known, but. But the off, so could you switch it off, please?
Okay. So I was going to ask about the distinction between your majorizing vector